kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining me, as usual, the still-diseased Cole Martin. How are you doing?
I am the harbinger of the zombie apocalypse. You realize that? Like, I'm going to be patient zero.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So what is it?
I have an upper respiratory infection.
Nice. That is always good to hear. Always good to hear. But you're alive.
You're
alive. Well, that is the important thing.
I would normally say I'm alive and kicking. But I have arthritis, too, so I'm not kicking. I'm alive and hitting shit with my cane.
Hey, that works, too. But it is a very good thing that you're alive, because we are joined by a guest right now. Joining for the second time, Rick Lagnese of Warhorse Studios. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm impressed, man. You nailed that Lagnese. Good for you, sir.
I tried. I even went back and listened to the last episode just so I can make sure what it was.
Oh, awesome. So doing great. Thank you.
And then I cheated and I spelled it out phonetically on my card on a card here, just so I knew.
Nailed it.
Is there a post-it note? Can we see the post-it note on the stream?
Yeah, right there.
That's awesome. That's cool. That's anything goes.
So welcome back. How have you been?
Doing great. Thank you. Doing great. Game's been out for a little over 2 months now. Man, time is flying. And we're working hard and we're doing good.
So for the people who don't know who Warhorse Studios is and the game you're talking about, give us the sales pitch.
The sales pitch. I haven't had to do this in a minute because we're talking about, game coming out and everything. But let's talk about the game for those who haven't heard it. If you're into role-playing games and you're into, open world, adventure, exploration, and even combat and that sort of thing, but you're looking more for maybe a realistic approach or something maybe even a little bit even based on history, that's what Kingdom Come Deliverance offers. I mean, our like catchphrase for our Kickstarter was Dungeons and No Dragons. So that's always piques someone's interest, because that's, Kingdom Come Deliverance is a game where you make a lot of decisions. It's, it is based on actual history. And yet it is a video game, and we try to find the balance there for the gamer. And, you're Henry, son of a blacksmith. You're on a quest for vengeance because your hometown was raided, as it was in history. And you're trying to find this sword that was taken from you. So I explained that, and, as part of the sales thing, because the story part is very important in Kingdom Come Deliverance. There's over 4 hours of cutscenes. And even though we don't call it a fighting game, basically, what's so funny? I got to pause really quick, because even though, like, we were talking about, like, the stream and the delay on Twitch, it's so funny seeing myself a second, couple seconds behind with my hands everywhere like this. What am I doing? Anyways, okay. And you think I'd be used to that with all the podcasts I've done, but it's just funny. So, there's, like I said, there's over 4 hours of cutscenes. Sometimes with certain quests you do, there's like 6 to 10 different ways you can do it. We've had people that'll talk about a certain quest they do, and then you have someone else say, well, I did it this way, and then someone else said, I do it that way, and have all these different outcomes. And that's what's great. You can play the game the way you want. You can play it like it's a fighting game. You can play it like you're just doing a ton of investigating and exploring. You can go off the beaten path, and it's a great game to get yourself invested into, for sure.
Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it, or I did when it first came out, obviously. Cole, you played a lot of it as well, and you weren't here the first time around, so I figure if there's any questions you have before I start asking shit, should I just, like, back away from the mic and let you take care of things first?
Are you afraid I'm going to yell at you, Joe?
You always yell at me during interviews.
I do. But you can go ahead.
So the obvious first question is, it's been out for 2 months. What's the reception been? How has the public enjoyed the game so far?
Yeah, so, okay, this was, it's our first game, and we really weren't, you're always wondering about your future, too, right, when a game comes out. You're also a company, you're a business, not just a place that makes video games. You're a company that wants to have a future, and sometimes as a gamer, we forget about it's just a different perspective now that I work in an industry, because I'm a gamer and being in the industry is crazy. And you think, oh man, how's this game going to take off? Because if it doesn't take off quite well, you don't know what's going to happen with our future, right? And 2 weeks go by, and you know, after a little after 2 weeks or something like that, we hit over 1 million copies.
Holy shit, congrats.
That's impressive. Thank
you. I'm going to tell you right now, we, you know, maybe we thought we could do that months down the road. I don't know. I'm just being honest. We could not believe how it took off so quickly. And the other thing is, it's it's been tough too, because, you know, being that I'm the U.S. community manager for Warhorse Studios, and I do PR stuff too, but you know, I'm constantly keeping up with what's going on with our community on our Reddit and Steam. And we have our European manager who, you know, runs our forums, and I still check in there from time to time. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, you have really passionate fans, and, you know, we've had a few patches now, and we're constantly trying to make the game better, because we've had some, you know, challenges here and there as well. There's always going to be challenges, but, you know, I just want to let people know, whoever's watching too, that we are still working, you know, I can't even tell you how much time is still going into making this game a better experience. And we're going to keep on, you know, patching the game, optimizing the game, because we want to give you, the gamers, the best experience that you can possibly get. Because basically, you know, the feedback has been really good. And at the same time, I love the honest feedback, where it's like, you know, guys, there's a couple things that have really, you know, been kind of like a few bumps for them in the game, because there was a few bumps, and we try to patch it, and then we try to patch this and that, and we're going to keep doing that. And the communication for us to our community is huge, so it's been nice, because that's what I focus on the most, of course. So the overall reception has been absolutely amazing, and at the same time, you know, the honest feedback too is that, you know, we still have some work to do to make the game more of a more smooth, playable experience, and we're getting there.
The thing I love the most is that not only have you been active with these forums, because I've seen you on Reddit a bunch of times already, dropping by the Xbox One subreddit, stuff like that, but just the fact that you're staying in touch and updating people of like, patch is hitting here, patch hit a delay, it's going to hit this date, patch is out now. You're continually just communicating. And that's what a lot of companies don't do. They just kind of like go on silent mode and let the shit hit the wall and they just ignore it.
It's not, I don't want to make excuses for anyone, but it's not always easy, because me or anyone who works with the community, you have to have this balance of, first off, you have to understand where they're coming from. I know that things are exaggerated on the forums. People will easily throw you under the bus or say things that are just ridiculous, but because they're not, if they're talking to me face to face, it would be different, right? Because people feel more bold behind the computer. But let's be honest, though, they're passionate. They want a good game. They wouldn't be on the forums or Reddit or Steam if they didn't want a good game. Of course, you might have your average trolls that'll jump in and
who just, you know, shit on everything.
And they never bought the game and they just want it to fail. I'm not talking about that, you know, stuff. But what's been amazing is, even with the, you know, the bumps and bruises we've had with like a couple like of, you know, just some bugs and stuff that were, like I said, we fixed it. We've actually made it much better than how it was in the beginning even. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, I try to really understand where they're coming from. I'm a gamer too. I don't want a buggy game, you know? And so even if someone gets really upset and says something, it's like, F you, Rick, you know, it's like, I told my wife, I'm like, I am trying to learn how to actually pulverize people with kindness. And like I'll send them even a message sometime, like just saying, hey, how's your day going? You know, and then all of a sudden it's amazing how even it's like we calm down and then, you know, it's not as like, you also, what I'm trying to get at is, you can't also take it personal, but I try and help even in that way a little bit, because a lot of emotion is invested into this. And so the feedback, I know that was a long answer, but it's been really good. But like, I don't ever want to like, you know, take the elephant in the room away, because the biggest thing for us is that, you know, we just released the patch, and then we're on patch 4.3. Now we're going to 1.5. We're working on that already. And it's like, we just really want to get this game going, because we're going to be supporting Kingdom Come Deliverance for a long time, and feedback is everything. Community is everything. So I really, even if things seem like way exaggerated, And sometimes they're not. But I'm saying I just try and really be understanding. And it's amazing how it goes a long way. And you can't take it personal if even someone insults you, because they don't even mean it, even if they if it seems like they do. No matter what they say, they can say, I definitely mean it, and they don't, because they don't even know who I am. But I know, and we care about the community big time.
Do you find you have to reconcile the request of the community with your creative vision? Like when the game first launched, there was the whole thing with the saves, and you had to buy the saves and use them to save where you were. And a lot of people kind of rallied against that. Even I was kind of not a fan of it, but I didn't hate it as bad as some people did. But like, did you have to step back and go, we really wanted the saves this way, but the community doesn't, so we have to change something we wanted to make others happy? Do you have to reconcile with that, or
sure,
do you because go, fuck it, they want it. And
well, here's the thing. Here's what I love about our studio is like we made a game that we really wanted to make, but we also couldn't have done it without the backers, right? Mm-hmm. Like we couldn't find an investor that would say, you guys are going to be successful without Magic or Dragons, because no, everyone says we wouldn't be. And so when we found an investor, we had to kind of a make or break with the Kickstarter. And so, you know, and we're still going to be adding things into the game that we had said we wanted to do in the Kickstarter. And the point being is that with the save feature, we were able to come up with something I'm not exaggerating. I find that was the perfect solution was you still need to buy the drinks. It's not like we took that out, and you can even make them. Yeah. You can even make that in the game, but at the same time, it's kind of hard when there's not like a save and exit feature. You know, there might be moments, especially when you start the game, you don't have the save your snaps, right? And if you don't have that, and especially if you don't even know much about Kingdom Come Deliverance or the challenges it poses, it can be difficult in the beginning.
Real quick, do you want to explain what the save system is for the people who aren't familiar with it?
Of course. So there's in our game, we really want you to have to stick with the decisions you make, because they're very important. Even in the smaller quests, you might make a decision that you might regret. And so if you just had it save all the time, then you wouldn't have that same impact in the game. Or, you know, going to, you know, you should save it, but you want to go at this bandit camp and attack, and all of a sudden you might regret that because you could die and you have to go back a little bit. Well, the ways to save the game was by you could sleep once a day to save the game. Another one was by drinking, believe it or not, actually alcohol, shave your snaps. And when you drink it, it would save it on the spot. But it's not always necessarily easy to come by in the beginning. But then, you know, you could buy them or make them in alchemy. You could even sell them to the right shopkeepers for good prices. Or if you have a better reputation, the more money you make. And then it would also save during an important part of the game. So the challenge was, okay, fine and dandy, we'll work with that, Rick, but when you have to exit because you have to get going. Now, of course, you could put your Xbox in sleep mode or PlayStation in sleep mode, right? And you could kind of go back to it, but at the same time, not everyone was able to do that, and we did have sometimes it was like it actually got stuck.
And it's not always the most reliable feature either. Sometimes it could kill a game just because it feels like it.
Right. So what we added in was a save and exit, which was interesting because you can back out, like you can save where you're at and come right back to where you were. But what we decided to do is like, let's actually have that save automatically delete. So if you do still make a bad choice or like you die, you're still going to go back to the previous save point, not to that save and exit. That save and exit is just to keep you right where you're at, so you don't have to worry about losing your progress from the previous save because you had to exit the game. You only lose that as if you kind of like made a decision yourself that got you in that situation. So we agreed. We didn't think it was fair to not have that. So now, honestly, I mean, I play it all the time, even though I put tons of time in before the game came out, and I'm playing on the Xbox. So I'm playing just like anyone else on the console. I don't have any special version. I have the same version as everyone else. And I have 5 kids. So when I'm playing, and I really don't play during the day because, you know, with my kids, but sometimes when a patch comes out or something, being that it's my job, I'll try and take some time to play right away so I can get this feedback from, you know, listen to the fans, but see for myself. And save and exit's kind of nice. So.
Yeah. So, I have kids too. And so I was just like, when I was playing it for review, and I'm like, I really need to stop right now, and I kind of just can't.
Yeah, and you know what? There's some things that I'm sure we'll end up, you know, that we're going to end up doing that's based on fan feedback in the future and things like that, you know? So we take all that, and I love it because I love this game, right? And I'm like, I love what the community's saying, and then I can bring it to the guys, and they're like, okay. And the guys and gals like, okay, you know, maybe we can. And it's so cool because I'm like, imagine playing a game you really love and you can have a big impact on what happens because of the community, of course. But I also feel like I'm part of the community because I love the game. So it's so cool to be in that situation where you really love the game, because I honestly don't think everyone who works in the game industry loves their game. I mean, 100% of it, can you imagine, like, you love to be in the industry, but then you're working on a game that's never your genre, but you still want to represent it well. It's like, no, I really love this game. I love Kingdom Come Deliverance. I was a big fan before it came out, so I love that I'm able to talk about a game I love and help make a difference and be more understanding because I'm part of the community just like anyone else. You know what I mean? If that makes sense. So.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I got to say, I really enjoyed the save system. It kind of was a throwback to me to like the days of the original Resident Evil and save ribbons. So you couldn't just save scum your way through the game.
Can't. I love Resident Evil for that.
Old school Resident Evil.
Old school. Yeah, not the new stuff. Sorry. But.
You mentioned that Kingdom Come is Warhorse Studios' first game. How does that pitch happen where you guys just sit down and go, we're going to make this giant-ass game that takes place in 1420, as opposed to just going, you know what,
let's make a fight
game to start with. Yeah, like how do you decide that a game like Kingdom Come is going to be your starting point? And where do you go after that?
Match 3 Puzzler.
Well, I mean, you know, it's awesome that, you know, our studio is in the Czech Republic, of course, and that's where the game is. That's where the history is, where it's at. You know, medieval Bohemia, which is modern day Czech Republic. And Dan Varvara, the creative director, and Martin Klimar, our executive producer, got together and came up with this idea. And they wanted to have an open world, you know, first person role playing game, you know, that's based on history and even a part of their history. And it, not just for the sake of the Czech Republic, but for Europe. I mean, what happened in 1403 in the early 15th century shaped a lot of the things in the world. I mean, it was where the Holy Roman Empire was going on. No one had ever made a game based on this point in history and this the geographical location ever. So Dan and Martin were happy to make a game like this and even make it with that, again, with the realism, with the time period accurate clothing, weapons, armor, vegetation, you know, the very heavy story-driven game. And so, you know, we had people that, you know, Dan Varvara was the creative director behind the first two Mafias. And then you have Martin Klima, who worked on Operation Flashpoint, along with a few others. And he worked on a few other games as well. But when you put Operation Flashpoint with a heavy realistic game with the first two Mafias, very story-driven, and decision making, you get Kingdom Come Deliverance. And where do we go after? Well, there's definitely, you know, we want a future, right? I mean, we didn't just plan on making one game
and then call it quits, right?
No way. Absolutely not. But
sell the million copies, we're done, boy.
Yeah. I mean, buy the mansions, we're done.
But, you know, video games are very, 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 very expensive to make, even for indie studios. I mean, well, especially for indie studios. But, you know, at the same time, like I was saying before, is that, yeah, we're definitely going to have the future, but we want to really keep on cleaning up the game as best as we can and going from there.
What other feedback from fans have you guys addressed since launch?
The biggest ones are with the, you know, like... with the bugs, right? So we get that's the biggest thing. That's the most important thing because we really, really, really want to focus on that. We already talked about the save feature. There are one of the other things that people wanted to do is to be able to take pictures, like, you know, without the HUD, you know, in the game.
Mm-hmm. And right now, it is a gorgeous game, so I could totally understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we, you know, right now, at least for PC, you have the NVIDIA, the Ansel support. And so now you can do that and take pictures from like 180, 360. Like, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And that was a very big touted thing. Another thing that we did, and this was more so based on our community, we actually, the Turkish language, there was fans from the community that did the translation for PC for the script of the game, and we, you know, worked together with them, but it was our community who actually did the translation.
That's really cool.
Yeah, the, you know, and that's, it's not even just that, but, and, you know, there's some other things we want to do based on fan feedback that I can't wait. But, you know, the thing is like, I can't stress it enough. Like, the biggest thing is, if you go on the forums, the truth is, it's about optimizing and polishing the game. And that's where the heart and soul is right now. So.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I am curious to know, what the hell's up with the lock picking in this game?
Oh, well, that was another thing. I totally forgot about that one. the lock picking, I'll tell you what, myself had a hard time. It was definitely easier for PC players, for Steam players in the beginning than console. But now that we've actually tweaked that, it's a lot easier.
I still can't open shit. I am awful at lockpicking.
Okay, now to be fair, and maybe you have, but did you talk to, remember you wake up after you Teresa basically helps you escape from Runt. Remember, he has like the big bat and he like knocks you around and stuff like that. And then you wake up in this house and you're being taken care of by this Miller. Bishak, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Did you get a chance to train with him?
No, I didn't. So no. I figured that's what I got to do.
If you fuck up his quest line, he don't teach you.
The thing that hurts me the most about this game is I had an issue with one of my hard drives and a whole bunch of game save files got corrupted. So when I went back to revisit the game this week and get some more time with it to prepare for the interview, my save was corrupted. And it happened with a couple of games. So all my progress was gone. And I actually just got back to that part today. So.
Okay, so.
So that is my excuse, and I'm sticking with it, goddamn it.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Look at this. Like, I'm going to bash this.
Okay. Ray, you're about to throw a stool at me. Why didn't you talk to him, you son of a bitch?
I'll tell you. So with Kingdom Come Deliverance, especially, most role-playing games you play in the beginning, it's going to be more difficult because you still got to level up. You got to learn what you're doing. Like, right now, I am actually getting pulverized in God of War. I also put on the hardest mode. There's no other way to play it. I'm very, dogmatic about it. You play on any difficulty besides the hardest, and you're a wuss.
I'm a wuss then.
I even tell people, they're like, what are you playing? I'm playing an X game, and I am playing in Super Pussy Crybaby mode.
Same here.
And I am okay with that.
I tease, but I can't play it any other way. But, let's say there's not a hard mode. You know what I'm saying? Role-playing games is hard to start. Well, with Kingdom Come Deliverance, I mean, you want to go into a game like, for example, you play Skyrim, and you can immediately choose, you're some warrior. And that's fine, because that's what I chose when I played Skyrim. But you're not a warrior. Henry sucks at everything. You know, what's the cool kid saying? He sucks at life, right? That's the cool kid saying. So he sucks at life. He doesn't know how to do anything. He doesn't even know how to work. I mean, he's the son of a blacksmith, and he doesn't even know how to do it himself. Like, he can't do much of anything. So you have to learn it all. If you don't train with Captain Bernard about fighting, training and you're going to try and go out there and do swords and you learn how to do the parry or riposte, and you're not going to stand much of a chance at all. So you have to even have a little patience, because our game is meant to be slower paced. Mm-hmm. Got to spend that extra time training. Now, maybe you don't really absolutely have to, but then remember, if you don't do that, you've only to blame but yourself for not training. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. The lockpicking was brutal in the beginning. It was brutal. So yes, we patched that and made it a lot better. But if you don't practice, it doesn't mean, if you do practice, it doesn't mean you're going to get it 100% of the time. But I can just tell you, as you progress, Henry does get better. You can unlock perks. You can unlock perks to where you can actually get it closer towards the end. So you don't have to spin it all the way around. It's a little closer, so you don't have to do it as long. Lockpicks might not break as loud if you unlock backpick.
I'll still find a way to break every lockpick. I'll find a way to make it happen.
Some people just aren't meant to pick locks, Joe.
I guess I'm one of them.
Some of us have to just be noble.
But you're right. In the beginning, lockpicks was a big thing, and it's gotten a lot better. But yeah, absolutely, for sure.
And I figured that was one of the things that was addressed.
I just actively look for ways to avoid it.
Don't hurt me, right? I can play Daddy Mode. Funny.
Yeah, people love the easy difficulties.
For shame.
So you mentioned the new God of War. Are you enjoying the new God of War?
I will tell you what. The one thing that I'm sorry, like when you play Last of Us, God of War, you play games that have such good gameplay with story. You really feel like you're playing through a movie, like a real movie. You know, Gears of War has attempted to do that, and they are nowhere near on the scale. I'm sorry, but of these, you know, doing these kind of games, I know they're not the exact same at all. They're not even close, but you know what I'm saying? When you try to have such a good story-driven game with all this, like, action or intense moments, and, like, I'm not going to lie, maybe it is definitely too brutal for my son, but I had him watch a little bit, just saying. And he's like, Papa, because that's what they call me, and my kids call me Papa. He's like, is this during the story, or is this, are you playing? And my son is 5, and he can't tell when it breaks into, like, the cutscene, because there really isn't a break.
Damn.
You're, like, kind of playing through it. It's incredible, and I have the Xbox One X as well, and the Xbox One X games do look better than on the PS4, but let me tell you, they have done such a good job with God of War. And yes, maybe it's not as much of an open world game, so they can afford to focus more on the frame and the graphics or something, but it looks incredible. And I didn't even talk about, like, I love, like, the boss battles. It reminds me, have you guys ever played Lords of Shadow, Castlevania?
I played a little bit of it years ago, though.
You know, one of the most underrated games ever. And the boss battles were so intense. It was like this. You actually had save points during the freaking boss battles because they were so long and so epic. And the music was fantastic in Lords of Shadows. And the story, what they did, not the second one, the first one was really good.
Yeah, the second one was kind of trash.
Yeah, it was too bad. But God of War just, and here's another thing. To be fair, I've never played the other ones. So even though they totally changed the style, you know, I'm like that kid that jumps into the Resident Evil 5 and loves it because they never played the other ones. But if you play the other ones for hardcore, they suck. I beat Resident Evil 5 with my brother. We tried it. And I can't say it like absolutely sucks because we would have just stopped. But Resident Evil 6, no thanks. And I still can't get in Resident Evil 7. I just can't get over the first person thing because it was based on third.
No.
From the get. I still want to give it a chance eventually. But God of War, just incredible. I wish people took their time more with games like that, with that kind of brutal combat and the challenge and the story, and put that all together. And The Last of Us and Kingdom Come Deliverance.
nice throwback there.
yeah. But it's fantastic. I love it.
I really need to fire that up. I'm one of those idiots that buys the collector's edition of games, and then I'll put it in the system, and then I'll get distracted by something else. And God of War is still sitting in my system waiting for me to fire it up.
You're not the only one. I still have Horizon Zero Dawn to play.
Same. Uncharted 4.
I haven't finished the Phantom Pain. I mean, I still got to go through the Metal Gear. I want to get into the Evil Within 2 because survival horror games are some of my favorite of all time.
Oh, you and Cole get along really well.
Indeed.
I don't think I'm ever going to catch up. Like Wildlands, I normally don't care and I want to play multiplayer, but now I'm getting older and I'm not that good at multiplayer anymore. So I'm just, you know, hanging, chilling in the campaign. And like, but I, you know, I go back and forth between that, God of War, obviously I'm Kingdom Come. And what's the other one I've been playing? Oh, I got through the epilogue or the beginning of Far Cry 5, and that might stay that way for a long time. I don't know.
I was excited because I had enough time to put like an hour into Far Cry 5, and that's the first game that I sat down and played for me and not for the show in quite a while.
Oh, it's amazing.
I'm always so busy with this show.
Get to choose what you want to play because I don't remember what that's like. I just sit every week and check my DMs and I'm like, okay, you're playing this, and this. I'm like, okay.
And half of those are from me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's like, I don't know. I don't like to, if I play any games during the day, it's because the kids are going to watch. And if they're going to watch, it's usually not going to be a game with intense violence. Like I tried to do that a little bit with God of War. Bad idea. I was playing against this boss battle. I don't want to give it away because you haven't played it.
Oh, that's fine. You can spoil it for me.
Well, it's in the beginning of the game. All right.
See, it's not even a spoiler then.
It's not. It's technically like the second boss battle. You snap the guy's neck at the end. It's like, oh, my kids, I'm sorry. You know, it's not like I want my kids sheltered, but they don't need to be exposed to this blood and gore stuff now. What the heck's wrong with me? So anyways, I try and play my games at night, and then, you know, I spend time with my wife, and then sometimes I just fall asleep, and I'm like, you see the grays here, right?
I just shaved, so mine aren't showing up that well, but I'm getting them on the side of the head quite a bit.
Yeah, side of the head. At least I got, you know, but who knows?
I got nothing up top. So you could brag about your head of hair. I ain't got shit up top.
Okay. I got my first gray hair when I was 14.
Whoa.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I remember I was in history class, and like one of my friends was playing with my, because I have red curly hair. And so everybody just wants to touch it. I guess they think it's going to feel like fire.
You mean like, it doesn't?
It does not feel like fire. But she was like, you know, she was sitting there running her fingers through my hair. And she's like, wait a second. She goes, Cole. And I'm like, what? And she's like, you have a white hair right here. And she pulls it straight out. And it's as stark white as it could be. And now I've got like a whole big patch. I got like a, what's the one from X-Men with the big streak in her hair?
Oh, Rogue?
Yeah, I basically got that nice. Going on above my ear. Like this great big, just plain, I just dye it and cover it up. Be like, fuck it, I don't need to look that old yet. I already walk with a cane, so I don't need any help in the looking old department. We have to make the grays go away.
Yeah, it looks like No Time for Games is right on the same length with me here, mid to late 30s, that's me.
Yep. I just hit 37 last month, so I'm getting up there as well.
Yeah, I turned 35 in February.
Crazy. We're young, but we're old, you know?
Yeah.
Remember when we were young and we thought we were going to be young forever, and now we're getting older and we're like, get off my goddamn lawn.
I was playing like tackle football when I was 25, still going at it, and then I tore some cartilage in my feet and my left foot, and then I tore some on my right foot, and then I never been the same.
Oh, geez.
It's like my feet have healed up, but I mean, I just felt like I've never been able to have that young self back and just like, you know, come back from the grave, or, you know, come back from getting all beaten up and like within that 24 hours. And now it's like, it's 24,000 hours to recover, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had a basic cold for the last week, so clearly I don't bounce back anymore.
Oh, my bones are creaking just talking about this.
Yeah.
Let's try steering it back around to get back on topic. What is next for Kingdom Come? Are you guys considering DLC, or are you guys just focused on taking care of bugs and improving what's there first?
I mean, obviously we've made that definitely clear that we are, but at the same time, we definitely will have DLC. We definitely want to also, like I said, include, like, we've talked about the dog companion, among other things that, you know, we still want to try and put into the game. And also, like a female playable character as well. And, yeah, no, I get it. I totally get it. I mean, yeah, we've had Henry, you know, and then, you know, but like I said, there's so much that's going on with the bug squash, and that it's like, you know, of course you know, you got to have a vision. You know, King Solomon said the best, without a vision, the people perish. You got to have a vision. So it's not like we're just going to keep saying we're squashing bugs. Of course, we want to have DLC, and we're working to make that a reality. And we, you know, we've talked about even more mod support with the community as well. So, you know, yeah, you'll definitely hear more from us in the near future about those things. It's just, you know, again, when I spend my time on the forums and Reddit and Steam, you know, the number one thing is that we're still working to optimize the game and relate to our fans that this is what we're working on. So, but yeah, we're definitely going to have DLC for sure.
How would a female main character work? Because it sounds like that would require a lot of work, completely rewriting and re-recording lines for the entire story, doing cutscenes all over again. It seems like that's quite an undertaking.
Well, let me just say at least this for now is that, you know, it's not like it's going to be the same, like she's not going to be like Henry, right? Henry has his story with his father and mother. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, like, how would you, replace that. It's basically that, you know, you'll be able to play as a female playable character, and there'll be some things that you'll be able to do, but it's not going to, like, all I'm going to say is, like, she's not going to be like Henry, you know what I'm saying? Like, not swap out, and it, you know, swap, kind of like a swap thing. It's going to be something that, you know, we've wanted to do since the beginning, that we said we're going to do. And, like Dan was saying, that, you know, we're going to have that, but, you know, we'll see in what capacity. But there's a lot of ideas and things like that, and we just gotta take it one step at a time.
Are we going to see Dragon Pet DLC?
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be surprised if somehow with the mod support of the community, I don't know where it can go, but you never know what someone's going to try and do. But no, we won't be making dragons or have magic in the game. You can count on that.
I can't wait for someone to take the Macho Man dragon from Skyrim mods and just put it into Kingdom Come somehow.
Hey, it's modding. I'll play the mods. You know what I mean?
What's your number one request for Kingdom Come, since you play it so heavily as well? What would you like to see?
It's something that one of the fans was saying is, you know, like, you can play the game after it's, you know, after which is great, because you can do the side quests and things like that to beat the game. But, you know, there's things we talk about or been suggested, you know, like with difficulty and seeing how we can balance it out a little more. Because when you get towards the end of the game, Henry's a beast. He's a beast. And it's so funny because you wouldn't believe that when you first start. And so, you know, there's always things you think about, like, how can you change that after you beat the game, or like, what kind of other, you know, challenges and things. And I guess I don't want to elaborate much because I don't even know necessarily what we want to do with that. But I love the challenges in the game. And even when you get, even if you're that badass at the end, that's like overpowered, how can we make it where it's still challenging? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah, for whatever that's worth. I love the challenge. Just like I told you, like Dark Souls, one of my favorite series of all time. I played all the Dark Souls. I didn't play Demon Souls. I played all the Dark Souls. I played the Bloodborne. I know they're going to talk about another Bloodborne at E3. You know, I love, I'm a glutton for punishment. And, and you know, it's so funny though. Like, that's why this game is so great, because then people could get this impression that it's just some super hard game and you barely stand a chance, and unless you're a glutton for punishment. That's not true at all, because you don't need to play it like a fighting game. You can do just a ton of investigating, exploring. You can go through the whole game with basically almost without killing anybody. And that's what's awesome, because you can even take it and be laid back. You can try and be that thief, or you can try and do all sorts of things. And I know I went off on a little tangent there, but just to clarify, it's great that you can really play it the way you want to, because you don't have to be the warrior like I like to be. You can avoid situations with your speech.
I legitimately spent 6 hours just exploring in the prologue before I even got to the opening credits. I had 6 hours.
Some people, when they got to the credits, they're like, oh my goodness, I felt like a whole bunch just happened. And yeah. That was a tutorial? Yeah. So,
I spent an ungodly amount of time just picking plants.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like, I picked the plants. I did the alchemy. And you know, I would say that it's probably, and here's the funny thing. I'm normally not, no, I can't say that, because I did a lot of that in Skyrim. In fact, I got way too powerful with the alchemy, and also the getting the better equipment with my Daedric armor and stuff. It wasn't, whatever. Everyone did that. But, you know, like, the alchemy in our game is really intense. And as much as, like, I normally, with the exception of Skyrim, don't do that in games, it's just awesome. You know, you have to cook it for the right amount of time. Sometimes you boil it or let it go to a, you know, where it chills. You know, you got to obviously put in the right ingredients, and when you don't put all the ingredients in at the same time, sometimes you have to boil, then you have to let it chill, then you put in the rest of the ingredients, grind it. It's awesome. You know, we really focus on the immersion to make you feel like you're actually there in medieval Bohemia, and that you're actually doing these things yourself along with the alchemy. It's just awesome.
So. Yeah, it's not just easy mode like a lot of games do.
No. Mm.
Oh, man. So, Cole, what other questions do you have? I know we've been chatting for a while. I don't want to take up all of your night. So, Cole, do you have more questions to ask?
No, I think I've nailed most of what I had on tap.
Let me down here. I'm giving you the floor. I'm giving you the floor, and you're just shutting it down.
I only have questions when you're trying to interrupt me.
Or it's like, man, I asked Rick a question, and he's going to answer it 50 different ways, and then we're going to be here another hour.
That's hey, fantastic. Works for like, me. That, I am okay with that because that saves me from having to come up with shit and yelling at Joe to shut up so I can remember my question.
I actually think people really do like to interview me, especially if they only they couldn't come up with a lot of questions because I do talk way too much. So then it makes it easier because you only really have to have like two questions and that's like a half hour thing right there.
Question number one, how are you doing? 30 minutes later. Okay. That was a good chat. So 30 minutes. Oh, okay. It's like, what is it? Have you seen the, An Evening with Kevin Smith videos at all?
No.
There was one video that he did. It's pretty much just like a Q&A session he'll do, kind of like a mix of stand-up comedy, telling stories, and taking questions from audience. And the one asked what it was like working with, I think Bruce Willis. What's it like working with Bruce Willis? Something like that. And he spent an hour and a half answering one question. And that was it. That was the whole special. One question. Because he just kept going on tangents and just... Like, he was talking about Prince near the end. And like, it had nothing to do with the actual question. He just kept going on different branches and different paths. It was really fun to watch.
That sounds like a normal conversation with me.
Wow. So I'm not the only one.
Oh, no. I told, like, we've had to edit some really weird shit out of shows because I just go.
I don't think I actually edit your tangents at all.
That might even be the worst part is if you just let everything. I know like one episode a couple weeks back, you could basically, if you listen to what I'm saying and write shit down, you'd probably get my entire address out of it.
Cool. What was that with like Raccoon Road or something like that?
Yeah.
That's the kind of show we do, Rick. That's what we do. You
just do what you do. That's fine.
So is there anything that you wanted to tell?
The egg coyotes to Kingdom
Come. Oh, God.
I want to tell people?
And she's asking if there's a chance to add coyotes to Kingdom Come.
To add coyotes to Kingdom Come?
Yeah, I don't assume there are tigers.
Why not bears? Why not we just throw in some kangaroos for you?
Because the dragons need food.
Oh, I see.
That is a good point. That is a good point. The pet dragon DLC. They need pets for the pet dragon. They need food for the pet dragon.
Okay.
You have to go out, hunt tigers and bears to feed your dragon. This is why I shouldn't be allowed to do interviews when I'm medicated.
Whatever. Oh, excuse me.
I'm sorry.
We're all getting older, you know?
Yeah, we are. It's way past our bedtime. We're creeping up on 11 o'clock, and I'm getting ready to watch Matlock and turn in for the night.
I think because my wife is probably falling asleep, so I think what I'm going to try and do is play some more Kingdom Come, and then I'm going to play either going to play Far Cry, Ghost Recon, or God of War. That is definitely first world problems.
Pretty much. And then I'll probably play more Rock Band because that's all I seem to play anymore. Here, I got one more question for you.
Okay.
Is there any word on those replica swords? Are there any left?
Yeah, you know, you never know what could happen in the future. We definitely did try and promote and had it for a while that, you know, if you got the limited, the limited, the best edition we had, you know, you could get Henry's short sword. And once we actually started showing them off, in fact, when I got the first sword to show off, people were like, man, I want to buy it. And let's just put it this way. We've definitely talked to the guy and the guys behind the swords. So, man, I can just tell you, once I know, everyone's going to know because I'll be too excited to hold it in. I want to share it with everyone.
Nice. I'm still sad that they didn't release a collector edition in America. I was ready to jump on that. And
yeah. There. Yeah, I know. Believe me, I know. And then, you know, you could, it was like, it sold out really quick because then, like, Amazon had like their own and it was different from like ours. So yeah, obviously if you back the game, you know, it was a little different, but at the same time, you know, so a lot of people didn't even hear about the game. Even after our successful Kickstarter, you know, people just hadn't heard about Kingdom Come Deliverance. And now I'm so glad that when you bring it up, most people know now. So I'm sure we'll come up with some cool stuff down the road.
Foam swords. There you go. Foam swords.
That's not realistic. No, thanks.
figure they're safer than real swords and probably cheaper to produce.
Yeah, but we want to really immerse you with realistic. No, just kidding.
we want people to die. That's the only way it's worth it.
Definitely do this at home. Don't do this.
I'm
just kidding.
Oh man, don't forget we're laughing about this, kids. It's a joke.
It's a joke, maybe.
Oh man, so yeah, I know we've been chatting for a while. Was there anything that you wanted to mention or talk about that we didn't ask about?
You know, I think that we talked about a lot of good things. If I were to just reiterate again that we're working on the next patch, we're going to keep that going. You know, you'll see me on Reddit and Steam, and I have a great modding team as well. And my point is that I'm always going to be there. You know, I love that the community, we you know, they have Warhorse really cares about communication, so they have us trying to go everywhere to communicate, and it's just important. I just, you know, we're gonna keep working with you guys on the, you know, and making the game better and better. And it's, I just can't thank you all who bought our game for your support, the backers, the fans, and we are definitely gonna have a very strong future. So look forward to sharing more with you guys down the line, and just make our game as best as we can.
I am absolutely looking forward to whatever future updates or content comes to Kingdom Come. It has been a fantastic experience so far, and I can't wait to dive back in and keep playing it and keep playing it and keep playing it and picking more and more plants.
It's always good to hear of a dev team that's willing to listen to the community as far as a game is involved. Because there's a lot of times that, you know, community complaints or requests can fall on deaf ears. And when you have a team that's willing to listen and to do the work and bug squash and innovate based on what their community wants, it's always a breath of fresh air.
Absolutely. Thanks.
So how can people keep up to date with you and Warhorse and everything that's going on?
Yeah. You know, be sure to, you know, our website is kingdomcomerpg.com. But, you know, be sure to keep up with the latest updates on our Twitter account, just Warhorse Studios. So twitter.com/Warhorse Studios. Facebook, same Warhorse Studios. You know, you can find me on Steam and Reddit. Of course, I'm Rick5925292 on everything, including Twitter. But yeah, I mean, I don't even care. I tell people my gamer tag is the same. I'm pretty boring. Rick5292. That's
like me. I'm Joe Camnet pretty much everywhere anymore.
But yeah, you know, our forums, of course, but, you know, we are going to keep having more and more things to share with you guys, with the community and our fans, and, you know, keep on the lookout. But, you know, the game is available for those of you who haven't played it yet. I mean, it's available on Steam, PS4, and the Xbox. It's been out since February 13th, and you know, it's going strong, and we want other people to check it out too. We want to keep, you know, just, you know, having a future. We want people who've never played a game like this to play it. I want to know. I want to know how the patch works for people. So make sure you know, follow me on Twitter, Rick5292, and I'm always on Twitter. So
awesome. Sounds good. Rick, it is always fantastic having you on the show. Doors always open. Anytime you want to come back and chat again, you are more than welcome to come back on.
Cool. Thank you very much for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Indeed. Everyone else, stick around. We have more show to come after a quick break. Rick, do you have any final words to end the interview?
You guys are awesome. You're the best.
You're a liar.
That's it. Mic drop.
Welcome. Oh my god, somebody just knocked on my door.
One son second. Of a bitch.
Oh! Yes. About to record a review? Sure. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
All right, I guess I'm getting pancakes.
Sweet.
It's worth answering that knock. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
I wish someone knocked on my door with pancakes.
Exactly.
That would be really, really nice. But welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks again to Rick for coming by and chatting with us. But we have work to do. We have shit that needs to get done. We got some reviews to take care of. We are starting off with the game Warhammer Vermintide 2, developed and published by Fat Shark. It released March 8th on Steam for $29.99. Also, Collector's Edition for $44.99. That includes a special skin set, soundtrack, wallpapers, and more. All that kind of fun goodies. Our five heroes have returned to take on an even greater threat, the combined forces of a malevolent and destructive Chaos Army and the swarming Skaven Horde. Prepare to be challenged like never before as you and your team desperately try to survive the never-ending onslaught. And for this, I didn't bring in one person, I brought in a team with Royal Sefton, CJ Greenwood. What's up?
Hey.
Sup, bro?
So, Vermintide 2, who wants to start?
It's lit.
We need more than that, CJ. CJ, you start. Damn.
Okay, well, if you don't know what this game is, one, you've been living under a rock, and two, it's a first-person shooter slash hack-and-slash game. Two slashes in one sentence. That's how important it is. Nah, it's pretty fucking good, though. It's like you fight a bunch of rats, and you're some, like, people. Like, there's a dwarf, a wizard person, which I like to play as, just like in the first game. I do not switch my paces. I like what I find, and I find what I like, and then I stick to it.
Hey, makes sense.
Then there's two people that are basically the same, but they have some different powers, I guess. They're both, like, just standard-ass people with swords that are probably both 6 foot.
Captain Average.
I don't remember either of their names, but I know that they were complicated.
It's good to see that you still have a way with words, CJ.
I'm glad that you can see that. It's basically the same game, but they made it much harder. As both of us can attest to, we were getting our asses whooped.
How did they make it harder?
Things just do damage more. Like, before, on the easiest difficulty, you could get through that shit pretty easily. Nowadays, it's like, you put it on the easy difficulty recruit, and they're like, ha, nah, fam, you're actually playing on hard. It was really fucking hard, though. We were getting killed.
Yes. Yeah, and things would turn south fast, too, especially at the very end of one of the missions. You know, you'd have to complete some quest, you know, align the crystals or stir the pot or whatever the hell it was. And when you're about halfway through that, suddenly just 8 metric tons of whoop-ass comes down on you. And, I mean, it's hordes and hordes and hordes of rats, but there's much more than that because, you know, a lot of the comparisons that this game's received have been kind of like Left 4 Dead 2 with swords. You know, you've got your specialty units, and those seem to really come and screw you up in a big way. So if you're not expecting it, you're sitting in a cloud of gas and you're dead, for example, just boom.
Yeah, I mean, you're right there. I feel like the thing is, Left 4 Dead and Vermintide 1 were much more similar, and I think with this game, they tried to separate it a little bit by giving it its own elements. Like, each mission feels like it has a different kind of ending now, and like a different thing that you have to accomplish, whereas before it was basically like Left 4 Dead, where you just time to escape, like, let's get in that fucking trolley thing that that would not be comfortable for 4 people, and let's get out. But in this one, it's like, all right, yeah, like you said, stir the pot or some weird thing. And disactivate the crystals. Like, there's different actual goals to it now. And they also, like, completely reworked the way the boss fights worked, whereas originally they were basically the same as the tank with just a big rat. Now they have a huge-ass health bar that you can't kill very quickly, even on the hardest difficulty. This guy, or, I mean, easiest, he has, like, a ton of fucking health, and he can take you out quick.
Yeah.
It takes some real teamwork to actually work on those guys. There's different ones. So it's really fucking awesome to have these actual boss fights in the game now.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I remember that was one of your gripes with the first game, was just, like, everything seemed kind of the same.
Yeah, it just felt like a reskin of Left 4 Dead with Vermintide 1. This one is, like, it's more of the greatness, but they changed it enough that it still can be its own game and have its own identity.
Nice, sounds good. Royal, what do you think?
I have to agree completely. And, you know, one of the things I thought was a nice touch, you know, going back to the Left 4 Dead as sort of a basis for comparison is, you know, you'd I think you hold down the Z key and you choose a dialogue option out of the wheel. When you're playing, it seems like the dialogue is just kind of flown naturally from each of the characters, including your own. And it's all very, when it's not color commentary, and it's all pretty well written. There's also some useful directions that are automatically given by all the players, whether they're bots or people. And I thought that was a pretty slick little number too. I felt like the characters were very well developed and complete because of it. So, kind of a neat angle on it, I think.
You're definitely right there. Like, my character that I normally play as is that, witch person, not the witch hunter, the other one, the actual witch.
Right.
And she would say things along the lines of, "There's ammo here. It's no use to me, but somebody else take it." Because in that game, you recharge as the witch. You don't actually use ammo.
Right.
Your ranged attack is just a rechargeable thing. And so I thought that was a really interesting take on it. And all the other minor little things they throw out, like you would expect, where it's just like, "I need healing," or if somebody's hurt, you're like, "Dwarf guy, heal yourself," something like that.
Dwarf needs food.
Can't remember any of their names because they're all very unique.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm hearing a lot of good.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. What were you saying?
I was just going to say, I love when the dwarf sings. That's probably one of my favorite parts.
Oh, God.
He knows a lot of drinking songs. It's hilarious.
Nice. I was about to say, I'm hearing a lot of good. Do either of you have any negatives about the game?
Oh, yeah, you know, part of it has to do with that difficulty level, as well as some matchmaking. You can do a quick play and it'll pair you up with people who might be like grossly more experienced than you, or vice versa. And, you know, the expectations there might not be realistic if you're paired off with people who have hero levels that are just well far and beyond where you are, and they're grabbing all these grimoires and all the other things that they can do to get a more complete round and score better. It's kind of frustrating to feel left out. And I think that's kind of, you know, endemic of any multiplayer co-op game where you're jumping in, and there are people who are much more advanced than you when you do a quick play or, you know, random pairing. The other thing I would mention is a possible negative, and it's more of just, you know, manage your expectations. It's fairly demanding on graphics hardware. So, you know, you can play it on fairly low end hardware, but it's going to look pretty ugly. And when you start taking down hordes of rats, the FPS will just drop.
That's actually one of my biggest pluses to this game, because, you know, in my computer, I don't have to worry about that too much. Not trying to show off or anything, but I do have a 1080 Ti, so, you know,
flex.
It looks beautiful.
it is one of the good looking game, yes.
It looks so, has a huge visual improvement on the first game too. Like, there is so much detail that goes in, even minor rats that are like pointless little enemies, and yet that you'll only see on the screen for like a second before they're dead. But they still put a lot of detail into those little things too. Although, don't be taking that the wrong way. They can fuck you up quick too. Like I said, your health, that is a negative I agree with him on, is that I think it is a little too difficult to start. I feel like at least the beginning, the first few, like, act should be a little bit easier and scaled down a little bit more for lower end players. And then if they want to change that to higher difficulty, then make it hard.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But as it stands, the beginning is a little too tough. Once you can get some good gear and start leveling up, it's not too bad. But at the beginning, it's like, it's rough, and we failed like our first two missions before we finally were able to complete one.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm proud of you that you were able to complete one.
We managed to complete more than one.
More than one, dick. All right, so the both of you, $30 on this one. What are your thoughts? What is your verdict?
I'd say that it's basically the same rating as the first one. If you have people to play it with, it's an absolute buy it. But I don't see this as being a fun game that you can play just by yourself. Other thing I wanted to mention real quick, the HUD, much more beautiful and much better done than the first one.
Nice.
I think the HUD looks a lot nicer.
Yeah, I agree with you completely there, and it's fairly clear what to do, you know. For $30, you know, I think you bring a friend or three. For $30, I think it's a pretty good deal, but you just you don't want to buy it and expect a good solo campaign. That's not what you're going to find here, but it's an excellent price for the game.
Cool beans, sounds good. Well, CJ, good having you on. Royal, I know you're going to stick around. Do you have any final words, CJ?
Go fast and eat ass.
What the fuck does that even mean?
I'm glad he could enjoy that.
It would have been better if you just, like, hung up and weren't here to answer that at all.
No, I think it was worth it. I liked hearing that laugh. I'm good.
What the fuck did that even mean? Oh, my God.
I don't know.
Oh, shit. Now that he's gone, though, we got two more to talk about. We're going to move on to Bullet Witch, developed by Marvelous Incorporated, published by Marvelous USA and Xseed Games. It released April 25th on Steam for $14.99. An army of demons has driven humanity to the brink of extinction. The only thing standing in their way? A woman in black with a long gun like a witch's broom and magical powers to match. Mow down hordes of monsters and reignite the spark of mankind's resistance. Royal, tell me about Bullet Witch.
Well, I would say I'm a simple man. I see witch, I buy. But it doesn't work that way, unfortunately. So it is kind of a chase cam shooter. And a pretty old school one at that. I guess it was originally an early Xbox 360 title.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, a lot of people, you know, were kind of surprised to see this game get ported of all games.
Yeah, because it was kind of a sleeper at the time too. I mean, I understood that, you know, there are some people that are really, really, really fans of this, and then a lot of people who had never heard of it. I fell into the latter category and did a little research after the fact. So I checked it out for Steam on my PC, got it installed, and it was real temperamental. Had a hard time getting it to work half the time. The game would open and then close immediately, and that may have been a technical difficulty as just my PC, or it may have been something that they later threw a patch out and Steam updated in the background and things got fixed. Don't know, but
computers, man. That's why I'm a console computers. Guy.
Yeah, I hear you. So anyway, I got it working, plays with the Steam controller and integrates fairly well with it, which is good news. And I got to say, it's a little rough. If it came out on the Xbox 360, 12-ish, maybe 13 years ago?
Something like that. It's been a while, I know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I kind of would have thought, that maybe there would be a little more refinement, but it almost literally feels and looks like it was yanked right out of the 360 and then just ported to run on Windows 10 box. So visually it's very early PS2, early Xbox, not even 360 era looking to me, kind of grainy and stuff. And even with some upscaling and other tweaks, it doesn't have a good, visual appeal to it that really says, you know, even prior generation to me, which is kind of a shame to say, because I mean, the art style isn't all bad. The main character looks good. A lot of the enemy models, they look fairly decent, if a little samey and consistent, you know. The environments are neat and a little lacking in detail, but not terrible. I think it's just that the whole thing feels a bit unpolished. A bit rushed.
Hmm.
And with that kind of turnaround time, I don't think rushed is really what you're hoping for. So I was kind of, I guess I was looking forward to it being a little better than it was.
Is the action fun at least?
It's okay. It's okay. I think for me, it started to get a little bit, monotonous. And part of what worked well for it is, you know, the once you figure out the controls, you can sort of somersault or flip out of the way of enemies, and you kind of get used to the aiming after a while. But it doesn't really seem to reward precision very much, which, you know, since it's kind of console controller based, maybe that's a good thing, because I'm terrible at aiming with a controller in a first-person shooters and even some chase cam shooters. I think Resident Evil 4 is like the one game that I consider the gold standard for that, where I was able to aim pretty well.
Mm.
But the action style is quite different there too, so that's not really a fair comparison. Yeah, for me, I mean, it was kind of like, just get the reticle on them, it changes to the color red that says you're targeting an enemy, hold down the trigger, fire, and, you know, you'd think there'd be a little more strategy to it in terms of like timing your reloads and stuff, but it never really felt like it mattered. I could just exhaust all the bullets in the gun, let it reload while I'm being shot at, and I'd still have plenty of health and time to remedy that situation too. So it was just a little bit monotonous in the end, unfortunately.
So Vermintide was a bit too hard and Bullet Witch seems a bit too easy.
Yeah, once you get used to the controls, I think that's probably a fair assessment. I mean, if you walk into a crowd of enemies and they're all shooting at you at once, you'll go down quickly. So, you know, I don't want to say that it's so easy that it's completely and totally a walk in the park. But, you know, if you keep your distance don't try to jump into the middle of a crowd and take them all down at once, you're probably going to have a pretty high rate of survivability. Turning around and pivoting was the hardest thing. And so if you're surrounded by enemies, you'll go down fast. But if you keep your distance and you're able to kind of keep them all at one angle, then it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
Then there are some other enemies, like they're tanks, and then there are these floating brain creatures. I think they're called geists. They seemed like they were a lot easier than I expected them to be. The tanks, because you basically have an insta-kill spell to take them down.
Oh, God.
And the guys, yeah, you have a lightning spell, basically, and it just destroys them. One-hit kill. You can only use it ever so often, so you got to charge up. But by the time I encountered the next one, I was already fully charged. So it wasn't like you had to run and hide for a while or anything. So it feels like even the pacing is a little bit rough and not real planned out. But you know, my review of it may be a little contentious for a couple reasons. Like I said, it's an older game, and also there is a cult following for Bullet Witch. Mm-hmm. No disrespect intended to the folks that have that sort of nostalgia for it. It may very well be exactly what they're looking for.
And I will say one big positive it has on Steam over the original Xbox release, it's not a $50 game on Steam. It's only $15.
That's true too. They at least priced it appropriately, I think, for what you're getting. So I got to give them that.
So for that $15, what is your official verdict?
It's a try it for me. It wasn't really my cup of tea. I felt like, again, I would have liked it to be a little more dynamic, maybe a little more challenging in its approach, but it's definitely not, you know, it's not terrible. It's just, it's not that great in my opinion. So, you know, check it out, watch videos, get a feel for whether or not it's something you'd enjoy. For me, it's just, it feels a little unfinished.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, you got one more to talk about. That is the newest DLC for Dungeons 3, Lord of the Kings, developed by Realmforge Studios, published by Calypso Media Digital, released April 20th on Xbox One, Steam, and PS4. For $4.99, the great king Arcturus returns from his quest with the Holy Grail in tow, only to find out that someone has devastated his city of Stormbreeze and the rest of the kingdom. He immediately set about recapturing the lands, but he hadn't reckoned with the always has the last laugh evil. Royal, tell me about Lord of the Kings.
So, much like with the prior DLC, it's a very similar issue. You've got, and by issue, I don't mean problem. I mean issue as in this is what you get for $5. You get the three missions, you get the same, you know, quality voice acting crew, you get new environments, and you get a new scenario or two. The interesting twist on this one, and one of the things I really liked, is you spend the first mission actually playing as the good guys, which I thought was a fun twist.
So you get to take out the evil for once. Go figure. Quite. When do you ever do that in games?
I know, right? Well, in Dungeons 3, that is unique, to be fair. But yes, you start overland, and it's pretty much it's not really base building quite as much as it is just overland combat and resource management. As you just sort of rebuild, but then for the remaining two missions, you get to turn back to commanding evil, and then you have to go wipe out what you had just restored.
Nice. So build it up and tear it down.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, you start out, you know, when you're trying to overtake land, you have a bunch of generic heroes. It's very Lord of the Rings. It's cute. It's funny. And very playable. I remember reading somebody had said, well, you know, I just felt like a reskin. I don't know. I thought it was better than that. I thought it was more enjoyable than that. You know, good writing and just a good pace in general. And I found it more accessible than the previous DLC, a little easier for me to get into, which
That's
is good
because I know that was your big complaint with the last DLC, was it was pretty much just for, you know, end game professionals only with the difficulty.
Yeah, I felt like the difficulty notch was set a bit high, which is great, you know, if you're really good at Dungeons 3. I'm not. I'm terrible at it. So you know, this is more accessible to me, and I like that for sure.
Definitely good. I dabbled with it a bit myself. I didn't get to put as much time into it as you, but holy shit, this one is as funny as I remember the rest of the game being.
Mm-hmm. Is absolutely.
When the opening cutscene makes mention of, oh, just like you would do in any other turn-based strategy game. I've missed this humor. That's the one big thing I miss when I play other RPGs or strategy games that are not Dungeons 3. That crazy sense of humor is just, it's missing in other games. And that's what I love the most about Dungeons 3 is the writing and the humor and the voice acting.
Yep. And it all comes back in spades. You know, you're not going to get a whole different reinvention of play mechanics, no massive new unit introduction, no change to the tech tree, none of that stuff. So it's quite seriously just more of the same, but that's not a bad thing with Dungeons 3. That's a great thing.
Good
writing, good humor. It's a pretty solid choice, I think.
So $5 on this one, official verdict, sir.
It's a buy it. Damn, it would only right be a try it if you don't want more Dungeons 3, and you know.
And if you don't want more Dungeons 3, who are you? Why?
Exactly.
Especially what's for only $5. How much DLC comes out these days at only $5?
Mm-hmm.
Most DLC anymore is like $10, $15, get a season pass for $59.99. Like, no, $5 DLC. Fuck yeah.
I got a new hat and a sword.
Yay! My hat has ears on it.
No, I think for $5, it's a good deal. Absolutely.
Cool. So overall, a fairly solid batch of games with you and with CJ as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Vermintide, Bullet Witch is good for fans of the original game, and Dungeons is good for everyone.
Mm-hmm. You good betcha.
Stuff. Good stuff. Royal, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words?
No, I cannot think of a single thing, and I can't think of any AC/DC lyrics to shout.
None.
Big gun!
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called The Swords of Ditto, developed by 1-Bit Beyond, published by Devolver Digital, released April 24th on PC and PS4 for $19.99 as my cat jumps up and hits my microphone. The Swords of Ditto is a compact action RPG that creates a unique adventure for each new hero of legend in the relentless fight against the evil Mormo. As you can hear by the typing, Tim Ekibis is here. Tim, how are you doing?
Motherfucker. I'm all right.
Are you saying motherfucker at something you typed or at the fact that your typing is audible?
I was trying to quickly... I know my typing is audible. My keyboard's right there below my microphone. I was trying to finish doing something and whatever. We're doing this review now.
Do it live.
Yep. What are we talking about?
Swords of Ditto. How is this game?
Oh, Swords of Ditto. This game, man. So, this is a roguish-like-ish Zelda-ish game. Zelda action RPG type deal. Like, it clearly draws a lot of inspiration from A Link to the Past in terms of its kind of its overall presentation and like visual style. So the first thing that happens in the game is you have a character who wakes up on a beach, like Link's Awakening. But the second thing that happens in the game is you have a character who wakes up in their rainy cabin out in the woods, like in Link to the Past. The idea is you have it's about the sword. The sword picks some random Joe Schmo every 100 years to try to defeat this evil wizard Mormo. At the beginning of the game, your dung beetle, your spirit dung beetle companion just picks you up off the beach. Is like, the sword, we got this, sends you to the castle, and you die. because you are not ready. And then, so then you start out your second run. That's kind of where the game gets going from there. But, yeah, the idea is that you die, or if you should die, the sword then passes down, to somebody else in the next 100 years, and they have another attempt at defeating Mormo. And as you succeed or fail in defeating Mormo, like, the world gets more or less fucked up, which is really neat. One of the perhaps the best thing about this game is its overall presentation, just like the graphical style and the animations are really good. It's really nice to look at. It's just like really good overall. And it has like just a great aesthetic to it. And that's just helped by the fact that like the world can get more destroyed or start looking a bit better, depending on how good or bad you are doing in your eternal battle against Mormo. Your seemingly eternal battle against Mormo. And good music, I should also say. Very, very good music ties into that whole presentation. But yeah, it's a cool world. It's a cool world, man. It evolves, and the world like changes around every 100 years, so stuff isn't in the same place. Like, the town will shuffle around a little, like, the buildings in the town shuffle around a little bit, and the tower, the evil tower will be in a different place, and the dungeon you need to find in a different place. So that's kind of where, like, the randomized roguelike-y stuff comes into play. And there's, you know, there's tons of stuff out in the world to find, aside from the main path.
So like, is it every time you die, you're a new person 100 years yes. later?
Yep. Yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah. Yeah, you're a different person completely, and it randomizes your character model too. Like, it could be, you know, yeah, different genders, different skin colors. Sometimes you'll have a ninja mask. Sometimes you'll have different weird hats and an eye patch or whatever. So it is a different person every 100 years. But yeah, there's like hidden caves and stuff out in the world. There's like hidden side quests. There's like this pirate penguin guy who wants you to find his penguin friends out there. Somewhere there's like this weird old cat that wants you to find certain things. So like there is still Zelda-y side quests out there. The main thing you're trying to do, though, is you're trying to get through these dungeons called toy dungeons to find these legendary toys, which are like your items from Zelda, and collect these toys and and then destroy these anchors that make Mormo more powerful. So, not unlike in Breath of the Wild, where if you destroy the four divine beasts, Ganon will be weaker at the end of the game. If you don't do that and you go straight to Mormo, she will be way stronger at the end of the game.
You'll get your shit wrecked. Dungeon.
You might get your shit wrecked, son. And you're the sword levels up as you go through this. And what was I about to say? Fucking A. There's a fucking time limit. That's what I was going to say. So you only have 4 days to do this shit, to topple Mormo, to explore the world, do the stuff you need to do. You got 4 days of in-game time.
Is it real time or?
No, it isn't in-game time. It is not real time. That time blazes by. Like, I was doing a dungeon and I went into the dungeon at like the beginning of the second of 2 days left, and I got out and they're like, well, it's 12 hours. And I'm like, oh, well, shit, I guess I can't fucking do anything else. So that's kind of a short span of time. I guess on easier difficulties, you get more time. There is ways in the world to extend or deal with that time limit, as it were. But and also the dungeons, like the dungeons themselves, those are also randomized on the inside. Which is kind of crazy. Like the puzzles will be different. I mean, usually the puzzles are self-contained to a room. It doesn't get as complicated as like a Zelda puzzle where you're trying to move things and get into different parts of different rooms and different heights and use items and all that shit. It's not quite there. But the you know, it's still different stuff to figure out. So this game sounds pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it really does. So
the problem is I had a fucking, I don't know how you actually progress. At least if you are doing bad, I don't like, so when you die, that's it for that character. You go back your next character 100 years. That's it. You lose all your shit. Life goes on. So if you cleared any of the toy dungeons, you lose any of the legendary toys. If you killed any of the anchors, those are gone. You go back to dude in the tower. And now your sword is level 3 instead of level 4, maybe, or level 3. And like, you know, that the level of your sword carries over is what I'm trying to say. But this is where like the game aggravated me and drove me insane, is that like you know, the first time I got to a dungeon, the dungeon's like, okay, you need to be level 2 to get in here. And I'm like, sweet, I am level 2 because I wandered all over the fucking map before I came here. I am in. I died in the dungeon. I go back. I'm like, okay, well, that sucks. That's fine. My sword is now level 2, almost level 3. That's fine because I'll be stronger than everything, right? Right?
You would think so.
You would think so, but the game keeps, like, adjusting the levels with you. So when I got back to that dungeon, I then needed to be level 3 to get into the dungeon. And I'm like, okay. And the enemies are also getting stronger at the same time. They level up, you know, level 3, 4, 5, just along with your sword. So I'm like, okay, huh. And so then I go into the dungeon, I die again. You go back, and then you need to be level 4 to get into the dungeon. And I had just, like, just cleared level 3. So then I'm like, okay, I gotta go around and fucking grind a bunch just to get into this dungeon, and time is going by, like, with everything being randomized, with enemies leveling up along with you not keeping, you know, any anchors destroyed, any of the major items you find. I'm like, how do you actually make, like, headway in this game other than
not just dying?
Yeah, by not dying, I guess. Like, you will, you know, you're going to learn a bit about how better to engage with enemies and whatnot, but, like, in any other roguelike game I have played, like, you progress. Even when you're failing, you might progress incrementally, and I thought that's what it was going to be. Like, oh, well, if nothing else, the sword is leveling up, so eventually I'm going to be able to tear through those early dungeons, tear through the early enemies, and, you know, see more of the game. And more of the game until finally I'm, you know, fucking up Mormo and whatever. And I just found myself just spinning my tires, and I'm just like, what the f- how the f- like, why is it like this? It just didn't make any sense to me. Like, you know, it just made no sense. And it's, yeah, it's not a thing where it's like, okay, well, at least if the dungeons were the same, then, okay, I can memorize the dungeon layout and I can solve the puzzles faster and rip through there. But no, the dungeons change. There's, like, nothing they put in front of you that I'm like, well, this will make the game faster. Made it really frustrating to me.
It just beats you down. The worse you do, the harder it hits you.
Well, it's not even like that it hits you that much harder. It's like it hits you the same amount. And, like, you hit it the same amount. You're just hitting each other. Like, But it seems tough to get ahead of the game, you know? It seems tough to, like, get that foot ahead. You know, you don't keep your money. You don't keep any of the items you've accrued. There isn't, like, a chest that you can, like, oh, okay, I'm going to store a bunch of shit in here for my next playthrough, so my next playthrough will be baller, right?
No.
Like, there's none of that. It's just like, nope, you're dead, okay. And, which is besides the fact that, like, enemies don't generally, like, you heal yourself by eating food, and so it's not like you're going to find hearts and pots like in Zelda. Like, I had a tough time sometimes managing my health because there's, like, traps that, especially when you're encountering these things for the first time sometimes, and it's like, oh, well, that thing on the floor looks dangerous, and I'm like, oh, that thing on the floor is a landmine, and I exploded, or now I'm on fire, or I don't know what this enemy does, and, like, you know, I had these rooms. I'd run into these rooms in the dungeons. This was, like, the first time I had come around. So it's like I had died. I come around. I was in the dungeon. I'm like, okay, I'm in good shape. I'm going to do the dungeon. Like, the first room, I had to, like, hit a switch, like, across the room with your little Nerf gun that they give you, except that there was, like, these indestructible block monsters just rolling around, and I'm, like, trying to figure out what the fuck I need to do, and they're just, like, all over me. And I died, and I was like, what the fucking, come on, man. Like, it's the first, second room of this dungeon. Like, what's going on? So it's like, it's really frustrating because this game seems like it's probably good, but the experience I had was fucking abysmal. And, you know, this is my review. This is the SML podcast review. Most of the other reviews I've seen out there have been pretty positive. And I'm just like, how do they do this? How did they have fun? I'm like, I'm here, like, waiting for the fun to happen to me, and the fun just kept, like, running, like, slipping through my grasp.
See, you could just do what I did in my time with the game. I just wandered around cutting down trees and bushes, collecting money, and then when I was about to die, I just turned the system off. That's the Jocam way to play it. Yeah, dude, that. Like, I'll worry about that later. I'm sure.
I used to play Demon's Souls.
I'll be fine.
I used to say that this game also has a couch co-op mode, which seems like, if nothing else, that seems like it would be a lot of fun. I did not get to experience that because there's not usually more than one person in the house. Not more than one person over the age of four in the house, or three in the house, I should say. And he's not ready yet. He's not ready, boy.
In due time.
Yeah, so I didn't get to experience that, but it seems like there's something good here. I don't, like, my experience was an absolute, you know, deny this fucking thing, what went wrong, but I do feel like there's something here. I feel like there's something that I missed. I feel like there is something for, you know, a co-op team to enjoy. So it kind of falls into more of like a try it, watch for it on sale, buyer beware, because you might have the experience I did and not the experience that other people had sort of venue.
Yeah, I was going to say, your experience is so drastically different from pretty much everybody else I've talked to.
I know! I told you last week, I'm like, man, you know, I got to see like what other people are saying about this game, because I just feel like there's something I'm missing, something that I'm not getting. And in the end, I was just like, okay, I guess, I don't know, I guess I'm just the worst. I'm the worst! What can I say? But, you know, it's, you want to have contrasting opinions out there, because not everyone's going to experience games the same way.
Very so. True.
If you were on the fence, then maybe, you know, if you're looking at them, maybe, you know, wait a little bit for sale or something, because it's like $20.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to just go up.
$20, that. Your official verdict on this one.
It's like, maybe try it, but maybe deny it. Might want to deny this one.
What's your verdict? I don't know.
It's there. It's like a low deny, or a low try, like a very like I can't write it off completely, but I am writing it off completely. Sorry. So frustrating. It was a really hard review. I just kept trying to break through. And at a certain point, I was like, man, if someone hasn't broken through by this point in the game, they can't refund it on Steam, and they have had a bad time.
Yeah.
Like, with the amount of hours I put into it, you've just had a bad time with this game, and that's, it is what it is.
Well, if you go back to it and things eventually click with you, definitely come back on and let us know.
If in a few years, you know, I get that child playing Swords of Ditto and we have a baller time, I will bring it up.
You will
I gotta sneeze.
Do it. Yes. All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Lightfall, developed and published by Bishop Games. It released April 26th on the Switch and Steam for $14.99. Explore the forgotten world of Noombra to uncover your mysterious past and save the land from imminent threat. In this land of eternal night, you will rely on your Shadow Core to brave the many challenges and foes standing in your way. Do you have what it takes to survive the perilous Noombra? Checking this one out and a couple others. Pernell Vaughn, welcome back. How are you doing?
Winter sucks. Go away. Also, I'm drinking Diet Pepsi, and I need an intervention on board game purchases.
Otherwise, I'm good. You're drinking Diet Pepsi. I'm drinking a Diet Coke.
Well, clearly, I'm drinking the superior beverage.
I don't know. Mine's twisted mango flavored, and that's fucking amazing. So,
mine is classic, as in classy.
Bah. I say bah to your classic Diet Pepsi.
Not bah.
Have you tried any of those flavored Diet Cokes?
Yes. I want to say I've had them all, and I would say mango and ginger lime are my favorite ones.
Those are the only two I like.
There was that one they had, which is pretty much just cheating. It was like black cherry or something, but it was basically normal cherry Coke,
mm-hmm.
just with a new can. It was kind of cheating. And then there was What was the other?
Spicy blood orange or something like that.
Blood orange was the other one, yeah. And it was good, but it compared to the two I named, not close.
The blood orange gave me heartburn.
I recommend trying it again. I feel like we even had this chat before. Like, you got to try it again, because I feel like that was just an odd... A number of factors came together, and it just resulted in you getting heartburn as you drank it. I can't imagine one flavor of a soda. It's just a different syrup.
You never know.
Heartburn. Like, if it happened twice in a row, I would yield. But I have a feeling there was something else that day. It just happened to be that you were drinking that soda. It was like, oh, shit, heartburn.
Maybe.
If only I had this level 4 spice Thai food and diet blood orange Pepsi or Coke. No, but I feel like that's got to be something like that along those lines. So I'd say try it again.
I have another can or two sitting around here, so I'll give it a shot. But we should probably talk about Lightfall, huh? What is Lightfall?
Yes. So Lightfall stars a little imp guy who's on a quest for Diet Coke. He goes between 4 different worlds, each one based off of a Coke flavor, and the rivers run wild with beverages. I could honestly keep doing, but I should
That'd
stop.
Be amazing if that was the actual story.
Honestly, I would care about the story if it was, but since it's not, I don't care about the story of this game, unfortunately. Because it's one of those games where it's like, you have no memory. Who are you? Though admittedly, they do kind of reveal what you are and who you are pretty quickly on. But the meat and potatoes of the game is the platforming, and this game is awesome for that. I did not expect what I got, which is that as a platformer where one of the main components of the game is that you create your own platforms. So very early in the game, you get the ability to conjure up a square. You can conjure up to 4 squares while on one air trip, as in you jump in the air and before you hit the ground. You can conjure up to 4 squares before you can't make any more. And what this does is there's a walk, you can walk, and there's like a run button that really does have you freaking running. Like, you sprint. And the way they could program this game so that when you hit the square, the block button, I got to say it's block because you guys were confused with the square button, an actual square button. But you hit the block button, and if you're running, the game places the block so perfectly under your guy that it's fluid to sprint and just make blocks and jump off of them. I was expecting that to be a big issue with the game, as in, you know, like, oh, it's not timed well so that you kind of run off the side, but no. So you'll be running from like water waves, dashing and jumping off of collapsing blocks and dodging like swinging pendulums while creating blocks to jump off of. You have to do it right because you only get 4. And if you overshoot it on your usage, you will not make the leaps that you need to make. You will die. You also can use the block for other means too. You can use the block to shoot like a bullet. I call it a block bullet. And you can kill enemies with it, and you can knock through like crystal rocks and walls sometimes. And the crystal rocks are like a sort of collectible in the game that imprisoned Noombrans are in. If you find them all, you accomplish the collect, because I don't think they do anything beyond that. And you also can find different story elements where if you find it and like take it back to like a checkpoint, it goes to a sort of library that kind of tells a backstory for the game, which is interesting because you're in this weird dark place, but all the things you find are calendar dates, like September 15th, 1590. So these are actual points in time. So I'm wondering how the heck this is actually going to play together and what this Noombra place actually is, if it comes down to it. But there's this old talking owl that kind of follows you around also. And he has this like old man was like, I wonder what the kid's doing today. Stop being so nosy, little one, and just start hopping on things.
Get off my lawn.
It's pretty much what he says. He's like, I don't want to be bothered, but I guess I should follow him. Because he's like the voice of the game, because the character you control can't talk. So the owl does all the talking. He explains who when you meet. He's like, he said to the kid to do this. Or he'll say like, oh, this place is decimated. We got to find out why it's trashed. Keep moving, kid, and stuff like that. And as corny as that is, the voice of the owl is actually kind of enjoyable. It's not grating. It's not terrible. It's actually kind of soothing. It's just, I almost don't care about the plot. I just like hearing when the owl talks sometimes, and I like just progressing through the stages.
It's about the gameplay, not the story.
Exactly. And the gameplay is on point. It is very fun. The collectibles are there. There's hard mode variants of every level in the game, so if you want to go back through after you beat the game and do the hard versions of all the stages, they are there for you too. And they're no joke. You will work for those wins. It's a genuinely good game. Like I've been enjoying it the whole time I've been playing it for this review. Sometimes you kind of feel yourself forcing yourself to kind of push through a product just because, like, well, I got to do it because I agreed to do it. This game was an enjoyable romp. I thought it was a good time. And it's one of those games where I think if more people knew about it that were looking for platformers, I don't think they'd be disappointed in it.
Cool. So $15 on this one. What do you think?
I think it's worth buying. It's a definite buy. Just the speed-based platform creation platforming and the myriad of uses for the actual square element is pretty nice and unique for these kinds of games. I like it.
Nice. Sounds good. Moving right along, next game to talk about is called Space Jacked. Developed and published by Rotten Mage, it released April 26th on PS4 and Vita for $9.99. Build, shoot, survive, invasion by filthy alien scum. Can you, space technician ace Dave Poprovsky, defend your spaceship against a relentless horde of aliens? Expect arena shooter action, tower defense tension, and multi-arena madness. Purnell, tell us about this one.
So, Space Jacked, I always get the name really screwed up, honestly, so if I got it wrong, just now let me know. But anyway, Space Jacked is a surprising tower defense game. So, one thing worth inquiring, so when you think of a typical tower defense game, you know you're placing an arena, there's a thing to defend, some spots to covet with or to populate with guns, and then waves will appear.
Mm-hmm.
What this game does surprisingly differently is it puts you on a ship with three different rooms, and at different points in the game, or the match, different rooms will have enemies spawning in them. So you're actually defending three completely different vantage points at one time. And it's kind of cool that way because different strings of enemies will show up and you get three types of guns. You get the basically like the normal machine gun sort of weapon where it's just pew, 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 pew. You get a laser weapon where after a certain number of seconds, it'll fire a concentrated blast at an enemy. And there's the stasis, which slows enemies down when they walk through it, each of which can be upgraded up to three levels. And you want to place these strategically in the different rooms to keep the enemies at bay as much as possible, especially because your gun is actually kind of trash. The recharge on it is not good to the point where you'll quickly find yourself overwhelmed if your guns aren't doing their job. And this game does something a little interesting with how it works. So when you place an object and you upgrade it and whatnot, if you decide to scrap it, you get all the money back. So as long as you keep managing your weaponry properly, you can kind of get enough money running around to actually come up with a suitable defense. However, as you progress through each individual day of the game, that's how they define stages, so to speak, your defenses will take damage. And after each stage, each thing will get upgraded and healed, or rather, it'll get healed for 25% of its damaged health. But you can also pay money to repair rogue machines. But if you ultimately repair things too much, you could find yourself in a position where you just don't have the means to support building your stuff up, and you'll probably end up losing the game. So there's a fair bit of resource management involved. It's not just dump all your crap into stuff, but the actual dumping into objects is in a loose situation due to the fact that you can recycle everything, but you don't want to spend too much on healing. Also, you unlock a cool little mini game here and there, where on each day you can take a ship out one time, and it's sort of like Gradius as far as like how enemies attack. Like you'll be in a little flying ship and enemies are coming at you from the right and you blow them up and take, you know, the stuff that can convert to resources. But meteorites are also coming at you, and if you end up taking hits, you end up shutting down and you'll not be able to acquire all the money that you would have been able to if you survived the entire onslaught. So it's another way to get a little bit more resources. It's pretty cool, though. I like the franticness of jumping between multiple rooms to keep the space station from being overrun. Also, you can walk on the ceiling. I should have probably mentioned that. Walking on the ceiling is fun. And some enemies kind of require you to. Like, there's like early on in the game, it's like a snail enemy that kind of runs along the wall, so walk on the ceiling, too. So you might have to put a turn on the ceiling or actually be on the ceiling shooting at it. So It gets to be pretty frantic. The only thing I wish, honestly, this might be that I just didn't find it or something, for all I know, but I wish you could unlock new guns entirely. But the game is pretty much structured around the guns that they give you, and it's just using them to the best of your ability to get through all the different stages in the game and rescue the different space scientists.
No. So aside from the whole gun issue, any other negatives with this one?
Personally, no. I've been having fun with this one, too.
Nice. So $10 on this one. What is your overall verdict?
If you like tower defense games, it's a no-brainer. It's worth getting. It's fun times.
I have to pick this one up myself. It sounds pretty awesome. And I know you were excited about it.
Yeah, I came across it, looked at it, I was like, I want to try this game. I wish to see if we can get a review copy. And bam, we could. So it's one of those times where I was like, I'm glad it was something that I saw. I'm glad you were able to get the review copy. And I'm glad I actually liked it.
Yeah, imagine I'm glad the developers let us cover it. That's always a plus.
Here, here, man. It's like, I want to be like, hey, get that cool game. And they're like, eh, you're not cool enough for the Turtle Club. Like, it's fun. I don't care about Turtle Club. I just wanted to play your cool game and tell people about it.
Hey, that's what we do on this show. We play cool games and tell people about cool games, and sometimes we play less cool games.
I hear that. And then when you hear about the less cool games, unfortunately, we got to tell you about those too.
Yeah, but so far we're 2 for 2 on good ones.
I have a good feeling about this episode. I'm just going to point that out.
Well, I know the next one is going to be another solid one because it is called Devious Dungeon, developed by Wobblyware and Ravenous Games, published by Rattalaika Games, released April 24th on PS4 and Vita for $7.99 and is a cross-buy game. Under orders by the king, you will assume control of a knight instructed to head into the catacombs beneath the kingdom to slay the foul beasts and monstrosities that have invaded the murky depths. You must venture deep within the dungeons, eliminating the threat. Slay monsters, collect loot, level up, and upgrade your gear. Only a true champion will be victorious. Purnell, tell us about this one.
Well, this is one of those sort of, I want to say roguelike, but not really. More like just random dungeon generation as far as the floors are concerned. But you basically start the game with Lederhosen and a rinky-dink blade. And the idea of the game is that you descend through a series of floors, killing monsters, looking for a key, and then using that key to open the door to the next floor. Enemies kind of vary in different attack patterns. You might have a wizard who sprays like 5 bullets. You'll get like the beholder eyes who just kind of fireballs at you, and archers, and things of that nature. And your arsenal is literally jump and slash. Like, there's no complication as far as the abilities of your character in this game, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. This is one of those games where I looked at it and originally thought this was clearly a cell phone game that got ported. But as I played it, this is one of those also cases where it didn't matter. It was honestly an enjoyable little game. Every floor that you go onto, there are 1 to 2, I'd say, hidden rooms on the floor. And those hidden rooms can contain larger amounts of jewels and sometimes books, which will give you large amounts of experience points, which you'll ultimately kind of need as you get further into the game, because enemies give you experience points to level up, and those level ups will restore all of your health. But you'll come to bank and rely on that healing, and as enemies start to give you less and less, those books are like your only real push towards getting actual levels at the time when you need them. So the only other way to heal in this game is to occasionally break open a pedestal similar to like Castlevania, and you'll get a potion which will give you 5 hit points. Other than that, you can pay a priest every, I want to say it's about 5 floors, where you'll come across a caravan that sells weaponry upgrades, and also $50 can be spent to heal your character. Now, when you think upgrades, don't necessarily think, oh crap, a variety of different weapons that behave differently, because you're not getting that. You're going to get weapons that increase your power, and they kind of have like a bit of a speed mod, where some weapons will slash faster than others. But for the most part, the weapons are just stronger versions of old weapons, which again isn't a bad thing, because you're just trying to proceed to the bottom of the dungeon. You're not trying to dance around and figure out which weapon is better, this one or this one. You just want to get stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
And aside from weapons, you can also get armor, which is just every armor upgrade gives you more defense. And then there are, what is it, potions and rings and amulets. And each of those things provides you with different buffs to stamina, dexterity, and speed. But I could be off. So, stamina, dexterity, and just more hit points. That's what it was. But essentially, you'll be going through this grind, and every 10 or 15 floors, you'll come across a boss monster. The boss monsters are generally stronger versions, like larger, more detailed, stronger versions of monsters you fought so far. But they're different enough that they make you kind of change your strategy up a little bit to figure out how to beat them without getting your butt handed to you. So, it's, again, my feeling of this game is that, again, this is a game that you want if you want something simple but effective. You're not coming in to devise a strategy. You're coming just to stab guys and keep moving. And honestly, sometimes it's what you want. I mean, I've been playing a lot of complicated games as is lately, and booting this up felt kind of like a breath of fresh air, because I didn't feel like I'd deal with analysis paralysis. Just felt with doing something.
I think that's why I enjoyed it so much. Like, I have been outright addicted to this game to the point where I'm actually playing it now while you were talking.
Well, there you go.
No lie, it's in my hand. Vita's in my hand.
You gotta take that beholder down. He's a jerk.
I'm a fan of games like this where it's just go into a dungeon, kill some enemies, level up, rinse, repeat. I really enjoyed the game Vertical Drop Heroes, which was similar to this. It's just this style of game just clicks with me, and I absolutely love it. And something I love even more is the fact that this is an $8 game, and buying it, you know, obviously gets you the PS4 and the Vita versions, but they're considered separate games in terms of trophies. So if you're a trophy fan, you're getting two trophy sets for $8.
Which is actually kind of nice, because again, it's like the kind of game where you can kind of just sit down, just kind of putz about, see how far into the dungeon you can get. And again, it's not even like a real harm or loss. It's just an enjoyable romp. And get two enjoyable romps, one on the go, one on the couch. What's not to like?
Exactly. And it's just, it's fun. It's a breath of fresh air. It doesn't take a lot of mind power to get through. It's just sit down, have fun, and enjoy.
Exactly. And so you can play this, you can go back to something more dense and, you know, troublesome where you have to manage a crap ton of stats and equipment builds, and then come back to this when you want to sit down and relax and breathe a little bit more.
So yeah, I don't have time for an epic RPG right now. I do have time for Devious Dungeon, and for $8, I'm giving this one an absolute buy it. I don't care what your verdict is, but I'll ask anyway.
Well, damn. Now I'm going to change it. Don't buy this game. It is turning. My take on this is, like, I think the best term I can give it is, like, similar to what the board game industry has. This is what I call a filler game. It is really good for when you want to jump from one game to another, but in the process, you want to sit down and just play something a little bit quick and smooth and light. This is a good filler game, and I think it's worth buying with that capacity in mind. It's a fun time.
Nice. I call those palate cleansers.
Huh. I can dig that, too. Yeah, we're basically like, okay, we played this one. Now we just need to just wash this all out so I can move on to the next product. Mm-hmm. What's a good run through?
I lump a lot of kids games in with palate cleansers as well, just because you play a bunch of violent games, a bunch of war games, then you play like Cars 3, and it's just a shitload of fun, and it's not violent, and it's cute, and it's enjoyable, and, you know, then you're ready to go back to another violent war game afterwards.
Yeah, and once you're done dealing with your PTSD from, what is it, Darkest Dungeon, go play Devious Dungeon.
Darkest Dungeon's another, you know, that's a brutally hard game. I'm not sure if you've ever played that one, the Darkest Dungeon.
I want to say I have it queued up and just never started because I heard that it'll drive me mad. And I was like, I honestly got intimidated by the warnings that people gave me about
it. Oh, you got to give it a go. It's fantastic. But it is not a palate cleanser.
For a second, I thought you were about to say it was. Like, even I know that's not a damn palate cleanser.
No, not at all. Not at all. But you have one final game to talk about tonight, and that is called A Robot Named Fight, developed by Matt Bittner Games, published by Matt Bittner Games and HitSense, released April 26th on Switch and Windows 10 Store for $12.99. Millennia of peace have passed since the mechanical gods ascended and left the lower order robots to cultivate the world. Unfortunately, for those left behind, something forgotten and terrible stirs amidst the stars. The Mega Beast, a pulsating moon-sized orb of flesh, eyes, mouths, and reproductive organs, unleashing its children unto the world like an unstoppable plague. Holy shit, that Mega Beast sounds awful.
Honestly, it's gross. Everything about this game, enemies are gross. Though,
the flesh, eyes, and mouths I can understand, but the reproductive, is it just like a monstrous beast of dicks?
I haven't fought that yet, but I bet it's in there somewhere because everything in this game is gross. So first thing worth mentioning is that I smile when every time you start the level, your robots, it's a roguelike, it's randomly generated in a seed base. So every time you play, the layout of the game is different. But every game does start out in the same way, which is your robots kind of kneeling. You have to kind of, surprisingly enough, mash the button, the jump button to get up. Hmm. And then there's like one robot leaning against the wall. And whenever you talk to him, he gives you a different message before you start the game. I had one where I walked up to him, press A, says, I have to go now. My planet needs me. And he just scrolled up with whoop. And I was like, okay, these guys are my kind of guys because that is clearly a Pucci reference. And I can't not appreciate that. But as for the actual game itself, it plays kind of like Metroid Fusion as far as the running gun goes, though I will admit the jumping can feel a little bit stiff. So even there's a couple moments where like there's some really narrow, small platforms you have to jump over above top of a bed of spikes. So it can get a little bit of an annoying thing there. But once you get used to that, it ends up being pretty fun. The monsters kind of are gross, but again, pulsating reproductive organs. What are you going to do? ultimately, the game kind of randomly generates a sort of Metroid, not Metroidvania. This is actually Metroid-esque, Metroid-like environment for you to explore. That means doors to shoot and run through, secret items to find. Though one thing they did for this game, which I think ultimately ends up working out for the better, is that in original Metroid and Metroid-like games, you typically will come across secrets that are hidden in walls or things of that nature, and you might have to either A, shoot wildly to find them, or come across an item seeker type item that lets you see stuff later. But in this game, they instantly show you on the mini map if there's an item in a square in an area of the map, because it'll show like a little square in the zone. So then it's up to you to figure out whether it's hidden behind a block or behind a wall or something like that. So you kind of drop bomb, not drop bombs, but you're trying to shoot bullets at stuff at wall pieces hoping to find the item. So you're still shooting walls randomly, but you're shooting randomly in a specified room, which ultimately is bad. Weaponry and abilities are interesting because at one point I questioned how the game would utilize the need for abilities, because if it's randomly generating the dungeon, how can it, is it going to randomly generate where a move is located and then make you use it? But it actually does manage to pull that off. Like you'll find like a slide ability and then come across areas where you have to use the slide ability to progress through the level. Or you'll find different sub-weapons like a flamethrower or a rocket launcher or stuff like that, which will use weapon energy a la missiles in Metroid to do more damage and sometimes destroy walls or break down doors. Every once in a while in a dungeon area, you'll come across a boss monster, which you'll have to ultimately kill or start over. And I'm not sure what the absolute trigger is, whether it's certain monsters that you kill or a certain number of monsters you kill or how far in the run you get. But as you play, you'll also unlock additional monsters that can show up on future runs, and additional weapons and upgrades that can show up on future runs. So as you play the game, you are slowly increasing the repertoire of items and abilities and monsters that you'll come across in future plays. So it's intended to constantly increase in quality. And there are different areas in the maps, too. It's not like the, originally I thought it was just like, oh, this one big generated zone. But they actually have different zones, like how Metroid has like North Air and Brinstar. This game has different zones you end up walking into. And they have their own different layouts with perks. Like some rooms, some areas are completely dark and you need to find like a lantern to see your way through the area or whatever the spacesuit equivalent is, because I never found it. I just ran through the dark thinking it was like one room in 20 and I died before getting back to the lit room again. But I got over the jumping issue and I got over the really gross enemy types, and I honestly had fun playing this game too. This has been a good episode for review games for me. I had to review four games, and they were all quality titles. But I had a lot of fun playing this game, too, and I actually hope to figure out if there is a bottom to this dungeon and what other new guns I can come across, because I'm hoping to get some really weird weaponry.
Well, I hope you hit the bottom as well, Pernell.
Thank you. Rock bottom. Best bottom.
I want you to hit rock bottom, Pernell.
Yeah!
Because I care.
Nothing says I care like rock bottom wishes.
Yeah, this game is sounding pretty awesome. Are there any negatives to it?
Honestly, it's mostly just that jumping issue. Like it's not bad jumping, but it's not fluid jumping. There's like a stiffness that you have to get used to. And honestly, Metroid could have probably had the same jumping, and I just forgot because I haven't played Metroid Fusion in a long ass time. But it's just like when you jump, you think you press jump and then you'll jump in one of the arc where it's like, okay, fluid dark, I'll just jump, move, land. But it's more like jump and your Kai will get off the ground, but it's like a stiff movement over. So you can't, it's not like a precise. Maybe it's an intentional delay in your jump for all. And like how Mario used to do it. Mario 3 and Mario Super Mario Brothers did it.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's still something you just get used to. It's not a game killer. It's just the way the game works. You just adapt and get over it.
Gotcha. So $12.99 on this one. What do you think?
I think it's at least a try it, because if you can get past the jumping issue, I think it's a great game and worth more of a buy.
Awesome. Sounds good. Yeah, that was a pretty solid lineup for you.
Oh, yeah. I'm worried now. That means I'm due for some shit.
Yeah, I can't wait to find something awful for you to cover.
Hey, you want to play Barbie Horse Adventures 3?
No, I have a friend who would be into that.
Let them suffer.
Shiz Blacka, you would love the Barbie.
Now you can groom her and the horse together.
Yes. Dude, no lie, there's an Xbox 360 game called My Horse and Me 2 that is only available in Europe, and I would seriously lose my mind if I were able to get a copy of that game. it has become such an in-joke with my friends that, like, I need to own a copy of this game sometime in my life.
Did they release it physically, too?
Yeah. Yep.
My horse and me. I'm going to pet you two. And love you.
My horse and two. Me, two.
The sequel, the first one, God sold damn right, so man. Well, they had to do it twice.
Yeah, released on the Wii in America, but not on the fucking Xbox. What kind of bullshit is that?
Horse hardest. This time, it's tropical.
Oh, what? God.
Tropical?
Well, Purnell, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap up all of that?
I need an intervention. If anybody knows a guy who's specialized in prevention of board game purchasing, send them to me. It's an emergency. The need is strong. Also, I recommend Space Base. It's a good board game. Everyone should play it.
All right, next game to talk about is called Bouncy Bob, developed by All Those Moments, published by Sonka, released April 27th on the Switch for $3.99. Hilarious couch co-op with a pinch of darkness. Defeat hordes of zombies and seal your fate with the push of one button. Beat your own high score in single mode or invite your friends to play together in multiplayer mode. Checking this one out, Chris Taylor, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great. I've been thoroughly bested by a classic Squaresoft game.
Ooh, which one?
That would be 3D World Runner.
Ooh, I like that one. Did you play it in 3D? It's good, did you have the glasses?
No, I don't have the glasses. It's a red and green thing, I think. Plus, I stream it now. Like, I'm actually on my Liar Exaggerate Twitch stream. I'm now playing through every NES game I own in alphabetical order.
Nice.
So, this is the third game in that sequence. But no, yeah, if I stream it, it actually doesn't flicker on with my HDF converters. So that means it would be impossible to see 3D glasses mode or something, I think.
Oh, well.
I don't know. Someone will have to try it.
Yeah, you'll have to give it a go. But how is Bouncy Bob? Tell me about this game.
Yeah, Bouncy Bob. Well, similarly, Bouncy Bob is a pretty challenging game that involves jumping around, although not any running, because in fact the mechanics of this game are quite a bit different. At first appearance, it looks like it's one of the silhouette platformers that are so popular now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dark background, dark characters, and then just a little bit of light showing you know what's up. But this one, actually, they did draw a goofy face on this guy, so that's really nice. And it, you know, it has that minimal appearance, but it's not quite what you would expect, because what happens is that your Bouncy Bob bounces onto the screen and you control him with a single button. No directions, no nothing. You have just the A button to basically you hold it down and a little trajectory marker appears above Bob's head and swings back and forth. And whichever direction it's pointed in, as soon as you release the A button, he bounces in that direction. So the mechanics are basically that the longer you hold it down, the more of an initial push that you get. And after that, you push the button again rapidly in order to flap your arm. That makes him go up, float, do other kind of things. And if you happen to push the button again as he lands on the ground, then he'll bounce up even higher.
Uh-huh.
And so you can, you know, really, you can really cover some ground, but you cannot change direction at any point. You rely solely on the trajectory and the physics of bounce. And so to this, they have added, you know, like all manner of zombie creatures, which are various blackish blobs. Like, you know, they're not... They somewhat resemble creatures, and they definitely look like zombies, and they definitely have that nice splattery sound effect when you hit
them.
But again, the graphics are somewhat minimal, so it's not a whole lot of detail in them. But basically, your goal is to bounce on enough of them that once you invariably die, you'll... because every game is just a marathon. So you basically have to reach a goal and then die. And try to get as good of a score as you can before that happens. And so, like, you either bounce on their heads, or there's a few little power-ups that you can grab that will help out immensely. One is a barrier that it shows up as a circle, and if you grab it, they're like floating in different areas, and if you bounce through them, then you'll pick up that power-up. And the barrier is the most useful one, because if you can get the barrier, and in the 10 seconds that it lasts, if you can get down to the ground or wherever it is that all the enemies are, you can plow through like a whole stack of them.
Nice.
And really up your score, so that's really good. There's an arrow upgrade, which, not upgrade, but it's just kind of a bomb. So if you hit that, then it shoots like a whole bunch of arrows in every direction. And that can help. I noticed that wasn't as good. The barrier ended up relying on, and then often in stages there will be one or two life power-ups, because obviously you can take about, I want to say, 4 or 5 hits from the enemy before you eat it, and so you really will need those heart power-ups. But the cool thing is also provide portals and things, so that if you bounce into the portal, it'll like put you into a different area, usually a safety area, so you can kind of regroup and like form your next attack. And so that's basically the single player mode, is getting through level after level of swaths of enemies. And then the multiplayer mode, I didn't get to try, but it seems like it's pretty much the same, but with another player, and you can fight them.
That works. So overall, it sounds like a cute little fun game to waste some time with.
Yeah, it's the only thing on it for me is the difficulty. In that, you know, you only have that limited range of motion, but enemies have things like projectiles that they can aim and throw at you, and it seems to throw the balance off a little bit, because, like, you get, you know, you're, like, sitting there plowing through a bunch of, like, little zombies that are just kind of trying to headbutt you or whatever, or bite you, and that's fine, but then one of them or two of them gang up on you with those spears, and then that really, really adds some pain to the game. So it is very cute, but be prepared for a bit of a challenge.
Sounds good. So $4 on this one. What is your verdict?
Yeah, that's a, you know, that's a try it or not. I wouldn't say it. I don't know about definite buy it. I would recommend it for people who would enjoy multiplayer aspect, which, you know, check out a gameplay video or something and see if you like it. Or people who are really into the kind of marathon challenge side of it, and they want their left hand free for coffee or something. I literally was playing it this morning, drinking coffee and just pushing the button with my other hand.
That is fantastic.
I was like, this is a nice lazy game.
Good stuff. You do have one more game to talk about, and it is our final game of the night. It is called Pick a Pick's Color, developed and published by Lightwood Games, came out April 24th on PS Vita and the PS4, $7.99, and is cross-buy. Pick a Pick's are exciting logic puzzles that form whimsical pixel art pictures when solved. Challenging, deductive, and artistic, this original Japanese invention offers the ultimate mix of logic, art, and fun while providing solvers with many hours of mentally stimulating entertainment. Chris, what is Pick a Pick's Color?
Oh boy, so finally, this is like my first foray into the, you know, rather popular Picross style of game, which I want to say is probably mostly popularized by Mario's Picross on the Game Boy back in the day, and I know the DS version was pretty popular, but this one, being a, I don't know if it, I guess it's, did you say it was on other systems or just PlayStation and Vita right now?
It's already on the Switch, and I believe there's versions on the 3DS as well.
Okay, cool. So
yeah, it's been around the block.
Okay, cool. That's good. I was just making sure I wasn't going to put my foot in my mouth. But this one adds kind of a different dimension to the original pit cross formula in that now... So basically, the way pit cross works, and it's really hard to describe with words, so bear with me, is that basically you'll find... You have a grid, and you have the numbers on each line of the grid, both in the y-axis and x-axis, and they'll have a series of numbers, and those numbers are basically your clue. So let's say it'll say, like, 2-2-1 and then 2-2. So you have to find on the board somewhere where you have two blocks together and then something between them and then two blocks together. And if that satisfies the clues that are also on the other axis, then they'll like blank out, and that, you know, once you get all the numbers blanked out, then you have your puzzle solved. So it's basically finding the right combination. And again, it's deductive reasoning. It's, you know, saying, you know, I know that this goes here and this many needs to go here, so I have to put it, you know, just so, that kind of thing. It's hard to make it more simple than that. The element that this one adds is that the numbers are also color coded. So now you know that you have like 2-1 and 2-2 or something like that. You have two red ones and then one yellow one and then two more red ones or something like that. So now you have to satisfy both the number of blocks and the color that they represent. And so what you end up with is, of course, like a simple picture at the end of it. And the cool thing about this game is that it actually lets you check yourself pretty much constantly. So if you make a mistake, you can push the triangle button. I was going to say the X button, I guess, for Switch. It would be the X button. But you can push the triangle button, and it'll tell you whether there have been mistakes. And you can then tell the game to fix the mistakes, and it'll delete everything you've done wrong, leaving only the stuff you've gotten right so far. So the reason you wouldn't want to do that is because if you can get through the whole puzzle without fixing it, then you get a medal on the picture afterwards. So,
hooray for medals!
Of course, you're going to want to try and collect all those. Yes, hooray for achievements. they make maddening because you got to get them. So yeah, it's going through and getting all those. Now, like for this one, for me being a pit cross total noob, I was able to get through all the 6 grids, which is like the first 5 levels, really easily. And the 10x10 grids are the next layer and next set of puzzles. And I have yet to complete one.
Really?
So I'm still struggling with this one because I'm brand new to pit cross.
Wow, I thought you've played them before.
So. Not really. I mean, I played similar logic puzzles, but I've never actually messed with pit cross. However, the game does a good job of providing you a nice in-depth tutorial. And the first 5 levels or so like serve as a really good tutorial. So I feel confident that once I get back into this, it'll be pretty smooth sailing. And, you know, pit cross puzzles are like any logic puzzle. You can take as little or as much time as you want. I think it does record your time, but ultimately the achievement comes down to whether or not you were a dirty cheater or not. on this one, by the way, I really, really love the puzzle theme, the main theme. You can toggle it on or off if you're, you know, if you get sick of it or whatever, but it's actually a really cute song and I quite like it.
Nice. Of course you had to bring up the music.
Of course.
So, $8 on this one gets you the game on both the PS4 and the Vita. What do you think?
Yeah, for the price of two games, and that this is a good quality Picross game with lots and lots of puzzles. I mean, it advertises quite a few, at least from what I could see. And I would say, yeah, it's definitely worth it if you're into those kind of logic puzzles. And I am, so.
Nice, sounds good.
It's definitely a good one to pick up. Mm-hmm.
Sounds good. Well, Chris, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Another thanks to Rick from Warhorse Studios for dropping by, and everyone else for coming on and doing their reviews. That is it for this episode. Chris, do you have any final words to end things?
Fuck 3D World Runner.
After winning, the game then switches over to Mario, who is in bed, and it turns out that he has just been dreaming up this entire game.
That sucks.